Tereo Ererangi o Te Mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Between the Waters, Polish Legacy New Zealand Charitable Trust presents you with the radio broadcast, Polish Waves.
Dzień dobry from Poland. This is Polish Waves, broadcasting on Plains Media 96.9 FM.
We are broadcasting at Canterbury Community Access Radio Station. You've just joined us on a journey to learn something about our home country, Poland.
Today, we will compare property markets in Poland and New Zealand. We will host a special guest that knows it all, and we will talk about homes and houses. Either you are a first home buyer, selling or buying, either investing or renting, there will be something for everyone.
This broadcast is presented by Between the Waters, Polish Legacy in New Zealand Trust, and sponsored by Polish Embassy in Wellington. Thank you.
We advocate and promote Polish heritage as part of New Zealand ethnic identity and provide a forum to present, share and celebrate Polish uniqueness.
You can look us up on Facebook, Polish Legacy in New Zealand. We are also available as a podcast on plains.org.nz. Welcome to our August programme.
So who do we have today in the studio?
Maria,
Jan
and Sylvia. So in today's programme we are going to talk about the importance of having home. What is actually home? For everyone, I think home is everything. It's where we shelter from the world, take our first steps, we learn about life. Home shapes who we are. Home runs deep in our identity as human beings. It is the refuge where we sleep and dream. Homes are essential for providing safety, security, a sense of belonging, contributing significantly to physical and mental well-being. The homes offer a space for personal growth, family connections, and the development of important life skills. Beyond basic shelter, homes play a crucial role in every human life. A stable and loving home environment is crucial for children's healthy development, providing a sense of security and facilitating strong family bonds. Homes offer a place where individuals can express their personality, develop their own routines, and create a sense of ownership and control. Homes are often the center of family life, providing a space for shared experiences, nurturing relationships, and creating lasting memory. There are so many people giving advice with a vested interest in you buying a house. Your mortgage broker wants you to have a house. Your real estate agent wants you to have a house. Your bank wants you to have a house. Your insurance company wants you to have a house. Your lawyer wants you to have a house. Your builder wants you to have a house. All other homeowners want you to have a house. Your local government and councils want you to have a house, to lock you into the cities and regions and to pay rates and taxes. Pretty much everyone wants the housing market to thrive and will always have a bias for self-serving vested interest to get you on board. So in life, basically, we need to get a job, good job, work hard, start family and buy a house. So, for that reason, we actually have in studio today a person that knows it all about buying, selling houses. Welcome to our team, Milena. It is great to have you here, and we are hoping that you will share your experiences and your expertise with us about property market. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
But before we go to the nitty-gritty stuff around property market, we have some personal questions for you. So just tell us what actually brought you to New Zealand.
Well, I always have the same answer, the guy. The typical story that I usually hear is of a Polish girl living in London and meeting a Kiwi over there, but it was a little bit different with us. So I met my husband, who was a Kiwi, in Warsaw. We were both working in the same language school. I was actually teaching English as a second language. That's where we met, and the rest is history.
That's good to hear it. So you said you were doing the teaching in Poland, and now you are in New Zealand doing something completely different.
Yes, I fell into real estate. That was actually a little bit by accident. So, yes, I was an English teacher back in Poland, loved the job. But when we came over here with Shane, it was much harder. I couldn't stay in the job. I decided that I had enough of education. I mean, lots of studies over there in Poland. And
totally relate to that, as I am a teacher as well.
Yes, you know, about all the colleges, etc. So I ended up getting a job in retail. I basically applied for a job at a high-end, I basically ended up in retail. Then I spent 2 years at Louis Vuitton here in Christchurch, which was a very interesting experience. And then literally by accident, I ended up getting a job selling Mercedes-Benz for 7.5 years. I loved that job, but it was full of challenges. And one day, a few things happened, and I thought to myself that this is it. I've had enough. I quit, and I didn't have a plan. When I called my husband that day, he said, "Are you crazy? You haven't even made a plan." And it just so happened that when I was doing my last month, a client of mine popped in. I sold her a beautiful car a few months before, and she just popped in to actually have her phone paired up, and we were sitting in the car, and I said, "It's nice that you're here so we can say goodbye." And she said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "I'm leaving." And she said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I have no idea." And she said, "Come and work for me." And she owned an office in Holeswell. She was a business owner for Harcourts. And that's how it started 10 years ago. Still been doing this since then.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
How long you've been in the real estate market?
10 years.
Okay. And do you see much difference in New Zealand as opposed to Poland in house ownership?
I would probably say yes, definitely. I'd probably start with saying that the housing itself is incredibly different, totally different. So most of Polish people, you'll find live in what we would describe as apartment buildings or blocks of flats. I mean, when Poland was flattened after the Second World War and we had communist government, they obviously wanted to give housing to everyone, and that resulted in very quick and cheap building. So, you know, multi-story, very horrible grey blocks.
Small,
very small. Very small. I grew up in, I think, 64 square metres with my parents. It was on the 10th floor. With a very loud lift. and you'd probably find that that's how majority of the population live. Obviously, there are also older buildings in the center of towns. And now, obviously, so many years later, after communism and after the Iron Curtain dropped, obviously, things changed. So there are wealthy people, and there are some beautiful houses, typically like in the suburbs of big cities. So that has changed. But I think if you were talking to an average, you know, Polish person, they'd be living in a block of flats. That's what I would call it. Whereas here in New Zealand, it's mainly houses. I mean, we are seeing that change with a lot of townhouses popping up. And it's quite interesting because obviously a lot of people are quite stunned and at the fact that there are so many townhouses being built with no garaging and off-street parking. But that's just the reality. I mean, when I think about where I grew up, you know, those blocks of flats were typically built in sort of 70s and 80s. And at the time, not many people had cars. And now you'll probably find that each family will have two. So that parking issue in Europe is a very, very common. It's a daily thing. And people somehow put up with it. You know, you somehow learn to adapt. And I think, as sad as it is, that's probably the reality of Christchurch as well. And I suppose people will just get used to it and adapt. And to be frank, I'll make this comment as well, because in my job I see it all the time. Majority of people don't use garages for their cars. It's usually for storing a lot of things.
That's quite right. I've seen that quite common as well.
Yeah.
In the area of Christchurch that you work in, is that the Horswell area?
No, so I started in that office and but I was always living on the east side of town. And for the past 6 years, I've been actually working out of the Parklands office. But to be fair, in this day and age, with all the data that we have available and the way I can observe the market and be in touch with the market, I can sell houses all over the city. Obviously, it's easier from the logistical point of view when you're relatively close to the office and where you live. But to be fair, I've had listings in Lincoln and Avonhead and, yep, you name it, St. Albans this year, East Side as well. But yeah, I don't seem to specialize in one type of area, one type of house. And that's what makes the job very interesting and exciting.
I was just going to touch on the question of rental and buying.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that there are more people in New Zealand that own their own houses rather than in Poland? Or are there a lot of people that rent in Poland? Is that a common thing?
Because I've been away for 20 years, I'm probably not so much in touch with that. I mean, it definitely changed over the years. So, for example, when my parents when they got married, so we're talking sort of 50 years ago in communist days, no one even dreamed of buying. So the communist government was providing flats, accommodation, so people would get put on the list. And then the government, when the time came, would give them the keys, basically, to the flat. And that's what happened to my parents. And sometimes it could take years and years.
Yeah, the waiting list was quite long. Yeah. And people waited for 5-10 years. Yeah,
oh,
sometimes.
And very often it was about who you know as well.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then things changed probably in the 90s. And I would say that in recent years, a lot of people buy property. And I also now, I think I have two or three friends who also own rentals. So it became a possibility to own investment properties. And I think that that's relatively fresh. I think in New Zealand, that's always been the culture. So people do aspire to owning their own homes and obviously owning rental properties, investment. I feel like there are probably more people that aspire to that. But I also know that those who rent and may not have the ability to buy, for example, because it's hard to save for the deposit, a huge change came with the fact that people could use their KiwiSaver towards buying a property. I think that happened a few years ago, and that was a real game changer. So I think that, and at the moment, I would say that with the interest rates coming down, we have noticed some renters entering the property market. So now with the interest rates coming down, they're able to dip into their KiwiSaver and actually they're able to have a mortgage and therefore they're looking. So there's been quite a change very recently with the rates coming down. Yes, I've noticed a big influx of buyers back into the market.
One of the things that are quite particular for Christchurch is that post-quake, we had a whole lot of as-is, where-is buildings. Yes. Is that still occurring?
Yes, definitely. A very interesting question, because we've actually seen quite an influx of those properties into the market just now, when in July the law came into force about healthy homes. So some of the landlords owned those kind of properties, and they actually had them rented out. And believe it or not, it's legal as long as you notify the tenant. But now with that law being in force, basically a lot of those vendors couldn't be bothered with updating the homes up to the Healthy Home Standard. So we've actually seen quite a bit of number of those listings pop up. Yes, so they still come up to the market. Typically, it will pertain to earthquake damaged homes, so homes that, you know, the owners had payouts for and they didn't carry out the work. But then occasionally you might see an as-is where it's due to its condition generally. So for perhaps a home that hasn't been maintained for years and perhaps has been owned by a hoarder. Sometimes that's the easiest way. Well, it's the best way to sell them just because you essentially remove all the vendor's warranties from the contract, and it means that people buy what they see. The curveball with those is for people needing finance from the bank, because usually banks will not loan on those properties. Yeah.
So you have to have a cash.
Yes.
Yeah. For that.
Or they can go to someone like a second-tier lender. Mm. These people will sometimes lend on properties like that, but obviously they will charge huge interest. So that's the whole point ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so now I think it's time for the beautiful song, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Our House. Let's listen.
I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs all night long.
Are there any cultural misunderstandings that you have encountered, either funny ones or challenging ones, in your career?
Well, the things that I learned, for instance, when it comes to the Chinese clients, they love number 8. It's a lucky number. So if you're selling in an area that's popular with the Chinese immigrants here in Israel, you can rest assured that if the number of the street is 8, there'll be a lot of interest. And conversely, 4 will put them off. It's been explained to me that it's pronounced in the same way in Mandarin as death. Mm. So they're very biased when it comes to that. And also, if the house has got a green roof, that will not be very popular with those buyers. Apparently, they have a phrase in Chinese when a husband's wearing a green hat, it's like he's been cuckolded. There is also an interesting one. It's never been a problem for me because when I arrive at people's homes, I always take my shoes off. But there are some nationalities and cultures that are huge on that. And I've heard of agents that kind of cross the boundaries, if you like, by not doing that. So that's an interesting one. I can't think of anything else. Yeah.
I'm just thinking I've got a house with a green roof.
Mind you, though, it's not a problem with Kiwis.
No. And you're not thinking about selling soon?
Not yet.
Oh, that's good.
Let me know when.
Christchurch has certainly grown a lot in the last number of years. So even now, there's so many new subdivisions going in. Do you see a difference in houses selling in subdivisions versus older housing stock? Do they move faster, slower, or easier to sell?
I don't see that difference. So obviously newer homes will be in a different price bracket. But in saying it, for instance, when you look at new smaller homes, because we see that trend, so smaller dwellings being built in new subdivisions. So, for example, something that might be 3 bedrooms, but it's only going to be 130 square meters on a post stamp size of a section, if you like. So that section will be around 350 square meters. I'd probably say that even though that house is new and double glazed, etc., it probably won't be as popular as your good old 3-bedroom bungalow on a decent 600 or 700 or 800 square meter section. I recently saw an auction for a house in Holsworth, 800 square meters, and it was an older lady's home that had been nicely double glazed, but still definitely work to be done. And there were 3 people fighting for it at the auction, and it sold for probably exactly the same amount of money that you would have gotten for the house that I'm describing, also in a new Holsworth subdivision, which is quite interesting.
So the theme of the Kiwi quarter acre is still quite
absolutely alive. Absolutely. No question about that. Yeah.
So you mentioned auction. Okay, so selling houses. We've got some options. So we can sell by auction and we can sell by something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what is it? Like, what is the option? How you can sell your house? What is the best? What do you think is the best and why?
Sure. The 2 methods that I normally talk to my vendors about when we are talking about selling a property is an auction or a deadline sale. You could always price a property, but I find that every home in New Zealand, in Christchurch, is different. And I can do appraisals left, right and center, but at the end of the day, the house is only worth what someone's prepared to pay for it on the day. So I can do an appraisal, but if I put it on the market 2 weeks later and something has changed, and for example, there are no houses for sale in the area, it's probably going to be worth more. But if 5 other houses in the area popped up for sale at the same time, it's probably going to impact the price because the buyers will have choices. So that's why I wouldn't put a price on a home straight away. I can do it later on after I've run the auction campaign or the deadline sale campaign. Now, when I say an auction campaign, it'll last 3 weeks. And basically, when you put your home up for auction, you are dictating the conditions, and you will be wanting the potential buyers to come to the auction with all their homework done. So they need to be in what we refer to as cash unconditional position. So basically, everything that you need to do when you're buying a home needs to be done upfront before you turn up to the auction. So talk to the lawyer, get your bank to approve that particular house, perhaps get a building inspector through. Sometimes you need to get a valuation. So I know in those respects, a lot of buyers say, oh, but it costs a lot of money up front and I haven't got a guarantee that I'm going to get the house. So, and a lot of people say to me, oh, we really hate auctions. But the thing is that it's the most transparent way to buy a house. So when you're in the room and someone is bidding against you, effectively, you know what the other offer is, what the other bids are. So that's the most transparent arena. And as a vendor, that is the best way because you are in the first instance talking to the people that have done their homework. So we call them A-plus buyers. I understand that's not for everyone because it's a very public arena. It can be very stressful. It's like a pressure cooker. So if that's really not an option for someone, then I'd be talking about a deadline sale. A deadline sale is basically when you put a house up for sale and 2 weeks later after the open homes, you're inviting offers. And so effectively, it's like a silent auction. So basically, people can submit their offers in envelopes. The advantage to the buyer is that they can put any conditions that they wish in those offers. So in this instance, they don't need to do all their homework. They simply can put conditions that suit them, such as they make that offer subject to finance, limb, sometimes even sale of a home and anything else that they wish to put in there. The advantage of that to the vendor is that obviously it's not such a stressful environment. They can then look at an offer or offers. So if it's a few, it'll be a multi-offer in the privacy of their own home. And they can then make a decision which offer they want to work with. I mean, they can decline all offers and then we can continue with the marketing. I'd say in this market that we are in at the moment, any home will have an offer or several. Coming back to an auction as well, because I forgot to mention that, sometimes people will talk to me and say, well, why would I pay for an auction if I see some of them not sell? So they get passed in. So why would I put my house for auction? The advantage is that for the 3 weeks that the house was on the market, I as an agent have managed to glean the information from the market. So often I'll know what people are thinking, price-wise, any type of feedback. And then if the property got passed in, then I would have enough information to put the right price on it to perhaps bring the market in. Often as well, what happens is we might not need to do that because I might have identified the parties who came through and said to me, look, we're not going to be bidding, but we are very, very keen to make offers if the property gets passed in. And we often see that the property gets passed in and after that we will see a multi-offer. And then you could also put a house on the market just by negotiation. But then I find that when there isn't a certain deadline in place, people become quite flaky. So you certainly want to give them a bit of sense of urgency.
So for how long the deadline actually lasts? Like deadline, when you decide on deadline, so how long do you say auction is 3 weeks?
Yes, deadline 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
I typically will do a 2 week campaign because you basically, people don't need all this time to get ready and unconditional. They simply need to make a decision whether they want to make an offer on the house. In saying this, though, what I'm observing in current market, there's been definitely a change in the past month since the interest rates have come down and a lot of buyers have entered the market. I'm seeing some crazy competition for some properties. I'm seeing properties being put up for a deadline and people being so keen that they still get themselves in a cash unconditional position to make cash offers. Yeah. Yeah,
because they are more attractive, of course, obviously, yeah, mm-hmm. for the vendor, yeah. Mm.
And occasionally I see signs, private sales, so
yes.
People will do their selling. I often see the sign there for quite a long period of time. Mm. Are there any advantages of taking that approach?
Look, I always say if selling a home was so easy, my job wouldn't exist. I have seen people have success, and I'm not saying that not to do it, but probably the thing that is the biggest disadvantage when you put your home up for sale is that you're doing the open homes, people will come through. And I know that if they see some negatives about the property, they won't tell you because they don't want to offend you. They will tell the agent. And these are important truths. So every home has got bits with it that are maybe not that right. And I know because 3 years ago, I sold my own house. Well, my colleague sold my house for me. And I had to learn some things from the public that came through when I was like, oh, it's a bit painful, but yes, I understand that maybe they didn't like the layout, etc. And I understand now that that will need to be price reflective because basically every house sells at the right price. So that's one thing. Another thing is if you sell privately, putting your home on trade new will cost you more because we get better rates as agents. And that's a significant difference. The lawyer, every time someone wants to submit an offer, you will have to point them to your lawyer and your lawyer will charge you for every time that offer gets drafted. It won't necessarily succeed, but maybe there is some back and forth between the lawyers. So you'll get a bill for that. We as agents do that for free. So if I list a house and someone wants to wait for the right offer, and in the meantime, I have to write up 7 offers with clients and present them, and every time perhaps they get declined, that's part of the service. I'll get the feedback, I'll pass it on, I'll put it in a marketing report, I'll pass it on to the vendor so they'll get the full picture that they need to have. And I would probably say I've heard voices from people who tried to approach private sellers and had very bad experiences because not everything got disclosed. So when an agent lists a property, they have duty of care. They need to find out everything about the property, that, you know, any information that needs to be disclosed. You know, is everything consented? Is everything permitted? Has the work been done to code? Was there any EQC payout that perhaps hasn't been used properly to fix the property? I've heard of cases when that knowledge has not been revealed fully. So that's one thing. And lastly, those purchasers that will approach private sellers would discount the price because they know that there's no commission to pay. So that will be relative. And I just think that I know that some people are okay with doing all that work, but it's a service that we provide. And there's so much work that goes into selling homes. So I feel like we are there to do the job and also save people time and give them their lives back.
Yeah. Okay, so now I think we are ready for the second song. I was actually really surprised that there are so many songs about the houses. So we've got a song of Sam Hunt, Country House. Mm. Let's listen.
Bible by the bed, double barrel by the door. Chickens on the rooftop, hickory on the floor. Down a little dirt road out here. Somewhere where the sunshine shines, where you can let your hair down. I can ride some squares around our own little fresh patch of beans. Or I can run my bird dogs, cut the grass with my shirt off, swimming in old pair of jeans. And baby, I want to live in the country. In a country house with you, I want a stove full of wood and coal on a hill with a heavenly view, where the days are longer and our love gets stronger and the grass is a little bit blue, cutting wood for the middle of it out in the middle of the country, in a country house with you. My shirt off, swimming in old pair of jeans. Baby, I want to live in a country house, in a country house with you. I want a stove full of wood and coal on a hill with a heavenly view, where the day
Welcome back. So we've got more questions because it's very interesting to learn about how to buy or sell the house.
As a person selling a house, what can I do to make a house ready for sale?
That's a very good question. I think it all starts with street appeal. The things that get overlooked are things like just the front lawn. You know, is the street appeal such that people are looking at it going, I really want to go inside and see what's inside? A letterbox, a nice letterbox where the paint is not peeling and it's not on an angle. That's always a good start. A nice doormat. So it's all these first impressions. So when people arrive, then obviously, look, you could obviously spend a lot of money if someone wishes to repaint fully and recarpet, etc. I know not everyone's got a budget to do that. So I always say if there isn't an ability to do much, just the touch-up point. So if there's anything that's that really does stand out, like, you know, a peeling paint above the shower in the bathroom, you definitely want to address that. So nothing that will send bad signals that it could, that something could be very wrong. So you certainly don't want to have any visible moisture ingress, etc. If all else fails, just go for a deep clean and a declutter. Now, declutter is such a bad word because it sounds like everyone's got clutter. They don't. I always say, let's just peer it back. And the reason I say that is you want buyers to be able to come in and imagine their own things in the home. So that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, if you've got a couple of pictures of your family on the wall that you need to remove them. No, because that's quite a nice homely look. But if it's a full wall that's covered in family photos, perhaps then it's a good idea to maybe, you know, pare back on it. Making it nice and homely and pleasant and eerie. And like I said, deep clean is always probably the best way if all else fails.
So I've heard also about this kind of like a staging as well. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to leave your own if you don't have it, like, you know, it's empty. Mm. So you've got a company that actually do this for you. There's a staging, yes?
Yes. There are several companies in Christchurch, some more expensive, others more cost effective. The idea of staging is basically for the furniture to be placed in the home. And it's very interesting because I find that you might think that a spacious bedroom could look quite spacious when it's empty, but mm-hmm. it's actually not true. So rooms look much, much better with furniture in them. And a lot of us don't have the imagination to see how a house could work and how it could be furnished. But once you put the beds in, once there is a table, once you've got a sofa put in, then it's much, much easier for the buyers to imagine themselves living in the home. And it's also excellent for the photos. I mean, a house online that's got nice furnishings and attractive rooms will definitely prompt buyers to go, oh, this looks great, I'm going to pop through the open homes, rather than a completely empty and vacant property. I'd say that it's a very good investment. If you've got a vacant property, It's
better to have some furniture because, yes, absolutely. As you said, not everyone's got the imagination. I definitely don't. But if I go somewhere and I see this, you know, double bed, I said, okay, yeah, that's enough for double bed, which is great. You know, that's what I want in this bedroom. Yeah. So this is a great thing to do.
Absolutely.
So if that's people prepping a house, what is it that people mainly focus on when they're viewing a house?
Very good question. I would say it's just the general feel. So if a house feels warm, inviting, smells nice, if it's spacious, etc. In saying that, I would say it will be also up to the individual. So if it's someone who might be downsizing, you know, they might be looking at the fact that the property will need less maintenance, right? So they'll be looking for a smaller garden. But if it's, well, we talked about the quarter acre, if it's a young family with a couple of kiddies, they will definitely be looking at the garden. Is there enough room to put the trampoline? you know, are the rooms big enough? A lot of people look for storage. A lot of people still want some space in the bedrooms. It's quite funny because you only sleep in them, but people still want spacious bedrooms. Good layout, indoor, outdoor flow. So, you know, particularly if there's a lounge and nice doors that open to a decking. And then the sun orientation. This was something very interesting for me coming from Eastern Europe, growing up in a block of flats where you... where your parents got allocated a flat and you were just happy with what was given to you. I didn't realize how many people here pay attention to whether the house is built for the sun, so north facing. And I know that there are some people who will basically dismiss properties if they're not built right for the sun. So that's always a big advantage. Yeah.
How do you see the property market evolving, especially for migrants and first home buyers?
I mean, I have seen an increase in that group of buyers entering the market. And that obviously with the interest rates coming down, we have recently seen the increase in prices throughout all properties. That might mean that the affordability for some people will be a challenge. But in saying it, I'd say that Christchurch is still an incredibly affordable market compared to places like Wellington or Auckland. So we saw after COVID quite a bit of migration of people from other parts of New Zealand. Then it kind of stopped for a while, and I see this trend emerging again. So I feel like the prices will probably continue climbing up, but I would imagine that places will still be selling. I think we're still a wee way away from that point where Christchurch will stop being affordable for migrants and for first-time buyers. Yeah.
Do you think we'll end up with an oversupply?
I feel like there is a little bit of oversupply already of townhouses. So that might be an issue, but I would say coming back to the quarter acre, you know, the good old three bedroom bungalows on four sections, they will always be popular. So if anything, they will probably become more of a rare gem, you know, situation where people will pay premiums for those.
Because obviously those townhouses, as you mentioned already, they don't have a garage or they don't have even parking space, but you would expect them to be cheaper. So if someone is really, really actually, you know, wanting to buy the house, they will buy this because that's just the only thing that they can afford.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, that's always going to be a driving factor. And I know that there'll be some people who will look at those because at the end of the day, you're getting a brand new build with double glazing, built to new code, etc. But they will forever be in competition if the trend continues. So very hard to say. Yeah.
Are they a good choice if you're wanting to get on the property ladder?
Yes. The only thing I will say is that their capital gains are very slow, if not existent at the moment. And there's a logical explanation. If you buy one now and then want to sell in 5 years' time, but you are surrounded by 50 new ones that have just been built, well, that's going to hamper the value.
Right.
So, I hope that answers the question. I don't want to upset any developers that are building them, but the reality is that their capital gains will be very slow. Yeah.
So now I think it's time for the next song. Miranda Lambert, The House That Built Me.
I just had to come back one last time. Ma'am, I know you don't know me from Adam.
These handprints on the front steps are mine. Up those stairs in that little back bedroom is where I did my homework and I learned to play guitar. And I bet you didn't know, under that live oak, my favorite dog is buried in the yard. I thought if I could touch this place, I'll feel it. This brokenness inside me might start healing. Out here it's like I'm someone else. I thought that maybe I could find myself. If I could just come in, I swear I'll leave. Won't take nothing but a memory from the house that built me. Mama cut out pictures of houses for years, from Better Homes and Garden magazine. Plans were drawn and concrete poured, nail by nail and board by. Daddy gave life to Mama's dream. I thought if I could touch this place, I'll feel it. This brokenness inside me might start healing. Out here it's like I'm someone else. I thought that maybe I could find myself. If I could just come in, I swear I'll leave. Nothing but a memory from the house that built me. You leave home, you move on, and you do the best you can. I got lost in this old world and forgot who I am. I thought if I could touch this brokenness inside me might start healing. Out here it's like I'm someone else. I thought that maybe I could find myself. If I could walk around, I swear I'll leave. Won't take nothing but a memory from the house that built.
Welcome back.
In my near where I live, there are a number of these social housing complexes being built. How do you see these influencing the property market, or are they sort of a different setup altogether? I'm not sure how they're allocated, but there's a huge amount at the corner of a street near where I live, where a hall used to be, and there's all these. There's all these units with no garages, basically.
So it's very interesting because I've had some experiences with listings in the past where there was social housing in the same street, and I had negative experiences in a sense that they affected the price of properties. But in saying it, I recently saw sales in one street in Papanui that's got a lot of social housing, and it seems that that particular street seems to fly, and it's almost like people don't care. So perhaps it's location related, or maybe when there is enough of them around, people will just get on with it and move on, and it won't be an issue. So it's a mixed bag, really.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so I think maybe just last question for you, Milena. Mm-hmm. So just tell us the cheapest house that you've seen or you sold, and the most expensive house in Christchurch. You don't have to tell us where, is it? But just the prices, maybe.
Oh, my most expensive sale was in Taitapu, and that was a beautiful homestead on 10 acres, and that was $1.5 million. And then I probably had some cheaper sales, but I remember vividly a sale this year, the last bargain in South New Brighton. It was a little cottage. It was deceased estate. And we went to the auction with my buyers and we picked it up for $310,000 because the lawyers just wanted it off their desk.
Oh, which is good, which is really promising, you know, for some people that they still can find those bargains.
Yes.
And that's the helpful thing about the market, the property market. So thank you. Thank you very much for coming. I think I still have like hundreds of questions, as you know. But yeah, thank you for everything that you told us. Thank you for coming.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Goodbye. You were listening to Polish Waves on Plains Media. You can look us up on Facebook, Polish Legacy in New Zealand. We are also available as a podcast on plains.org.nz. Our next broadcast is at 8 p.m. on Friday, 12th of September.
Do usłyszenia.